What's up, everyone? I'm your podcast host, Chinette, and you're listening to the Hopkins Hacks podcast. Everyone has a unique journey of exploration at Hopkins, and our podcast puts your favorite faculty, alumni, and students in the hot seat to share their experiences and takeaways. We discuss the four key pillars of college life, including work, relationship, health, and play. This episode is the second in a three-part collaborative series with the Office of Undergraduate Admissions. We aim to give prospective and admitted students an insider's look at the Hopkins experience through some informal, candid conversations. Our guest for today is Sophia, a current junior triple majoring in English, writing seminars, and French, with a minor in women and gender and sexuality. A few highlights from our discussion includes why Sophia chose Hopkins to pursue her interest in literature and writing, how she found her community through her sorority and ballet, her tips for time management and finding balance, and how she formed relationships with professors and mentors. Let's get into it. Sophia, tell me a bit more about yourself.
Yeah, so my name is Sophia. I use she, her pronouns. I'm from the Bay Area in California, right next to Stanford University, and I'm a junior at Johns Hopkins studying English, writing seminars, and French with a minor in women, gender, and sexuality. Outside of my classes, I'm involved with the Hopkins Ballet Club, which is a lot of fun. I'm also involved with Greek Life and then the Women's Network as well. And then beyond those kind of extracurriculars, I do a lot of things with first year onboarding and orientation. So I'm a first year mentor, which has been a great opportunity to interact with a lot of Hopkins students. I TA the Arrive and Thrive class, which is a similar opportunity. I'm a study consultant. I also work at the University Special Collections and Archives, and recently started with Project Muse, which is through the Johns Hopkins University Press. Yeah, so that's, I think it's all been a really nice opportunity to get involved in a lot of different departments throughout the university.
Can you tell us a little bit more about what made you choose Hopkins? What about Hopkins potentially stood out to you?
Yeah, so I think when I was looking at universities, I knew that I wanted to study literature and writing in some form, but I didn't know what that looked like yet. I think I knew that I had a lot of interests and I wasn't sure how I was going to be able to combine those in a way that felt meaningful to me. Mm-hmm. So when I was looking at Hopkins, one of the things that stuck out to me was, you know, there's a writing seminars major. That was very exciting. I had never heard of anything like that before. And I think it is very comparable to a lot of creative writing programs, but writing seminars sounded different. But then also, I think because there is no core curriculum, there's so much flexibility within the classes, so I knew it would be possible to take classes that target writing seminars and English at the same time, or just having the openness in my schedule to take enough classes that I can fulfill all the requirements. I think since I've gotten here, part of what I've learned as well is that there are so many advisors. I think right now I have 5 advisors, the general one, 3 for my major and 1 for my minor, and while I don't meet with them all the time, it's really nice to have all of those people who can give input on my schedule and make sure that I'm making decisions that result in, I think, meaningful interactions between courses. So I took Irish literature and British literature at the same time, getting a different perspective on a lot of the same historical events. So that was really great. I'll have some semesters where I focus a lot more on women, gender, and sexuality, looking at those crossovers as well. So,
can you expand perhaps a little bit more about what you learned in Irish and British literature?
Yeah, I think the British literature course I took, it was a very broad survey course. Mm-hmm. So I think it was Chaucer to Ben. So we began with the Canterbury Tales. So it had been a while since we didn't read the whole thing. But I think I read part of it in high school and I read a different part of it for this class. So that was interesting. We moved on to Paradise Lost. I'd taken an entire course on Milton at this school, but I think moving through Paradise Lost in this class was very different because it was a lot more from, I guess, a sociologist's perspective. So we were doing a lot of things that involved history, what was going on in political trends, but then also looking at psychoanalysis, which was wild, I thought, as we were doing psychoanalysis on characters from Paradise Lost, like Satan. Mm-hmm. So that was really interesting. And then from there, we moved on, eventually ending up with the work of Afra Ben, who is another writer that I have encountered in another Hopkins course. I took Old World, New World Women, where we were looking at women who kind of moved back and forth between coasts. So that's what we were looking at, and how colonization was impacting their writing, whether they were colonizers or colonists, or the colonized. So that was very interesting. And again, a lot of psychoanalysis going on, so looking at a lot of Freud, figuring out how that might factor into that discussion. But I think for one of the texts that we read for the survey course, which was The Fairy Queen by Spencer, that one I think has a very, I think, complicated relationship with Irish literature, because he was in Ireland for a while, moving back and forth, so it was interesting to then take my Irish literature course, where we were thinking, does he fit in the Irish literature? Some people say yes, some people say no. But, yeah.
So I'd imagine that these are all part of your English major.
They are, yeah.
Can you potentially expand a little bit more for people who aren't familiar with the writing seminars major or the Hopkins curriculum in general? What are the differences between studying, majoring in writing seminars versus majoring in English, since you're majoring in both?
Yeah, so for English, I think that one focuses a lot more on formal literary study and analysis. So that's reading texts, a lot of them you might have heard of. There are Shakespeare courses, Milton courses, and of course more contemporary courses as well. I think right now I'm taking a forms of moral community course, in which we're focusing on literature all written in the late 20th century. So there's that. But for those courses, when we do the readings, we're focusing on not necessarily the analysis of the craft of the writing, but more what it suggests about other things. So that kind of analysis that you would get in a typical English course. For writing seminars, though, a lot of what we're doing is focusing on the writing itself. So right now, for one of my writing seminars courses, it's primarily a workshop, but outside of the workshop, we also read the best debut short stories of 2022. So we're looking at why people are getting published for the first time and why those stories need to be in the world, according to a couple editors or a couple publishers. So we're not really focusing on necessarily what this story means or what we can understand about the time period from that, but on the sentence level, how is it functioning? Why do we like it? Why do we not like it? So one of them was written from, it was in the second person point of view, so you. And it was really hard to read, kind of unpleasant. So rather than talking about, you know, this story is about his relationship with his mother, his relationship with his father, we were talking about how this perspective makes it really hard to get through this, and maybe it would be worth it to think about why perspective interacts with the story in that way, something like that.
Do you have a preference between the two? Which one do you think is more important, the craft or the interpretation?
That's a tricky question. I think I really enjoy talking about the craft, just because I think I'm interested in the mechanics of creating a sentence, and I enjoy doing that work to talk through it with a group of people. However, I think in the future, I imagine myself, I think on a very basic level, relying more on the English degree than the writing seminars one. I think the writing seminars one has made it so that I can write very confidently in my English courses. I think because I love writing, but I'm not sure if I want to be a full-time writer. Okay. So I think for that reason, I'll say English.
Where do you see yourself in the future?
Well, I'd like to be an English professor. So.
Oh, wow.
I think it's pretty obvious then why I feel that way about English.
What inspired you to be an English professor?
I think it actually, it sounds cheesy, but when I was very little, I'd have my arts classes, and I thought, I want to be a language arts teacher in second grade. And then I got to middle school and said, I'm going to be a middle school English teacher. And then I got to high school and I was going to teach high school English. And sometime during high school, I realized, no, there's a space beyond high school, and I could operate in that space too. So I think I've known that I want to do some form of teaching for a long time, but professors have one, access to a lot of really cool people, great colleagues, students, anything like that, but also they can do research. And I think having that support to do research and figure out how that works with teaching, how that works with publishing, anything like that, is something that feels very exciting to me.
That's awesome. Do you think that there is a lot of support here at Hopkins for you to pursue further into academia and literature? Because I'd imagine I come from the engineering department, and I know that there's definitely people's impression of Hopkins are commonly associated with the med school here, or potentially the School of Public Health or School of International Studies. Compared to other subjects, I don't think that English or writing seminars are as commonly referenced. And so I'm just curious to see, like, how do you think, have you managed to navigate yourself within the Hopkins community?
Yeah, I think there are two parts to that question. So one, with the support from the department, is a ton of it.
That's awesome.
Part of that, I think, is because it is a smaller department. It's true. I think a lot of people come here for engineering or other STEM fields that might have larger class sizes, things like that. But because these departments that I'm interacting with most are smaller, that means that my largest class by far this semester has 20 people.
Wow.
My smallest has 4.
Wow.
And I've taken a 2-person class. So
that's amazing.
I think just because there are so few people in the room sometimes, one, it means you have to do the reading, but two, it's almost impossible not to get the support. If you're talking however much you should be talking, then you're talking probably a fifth of the class. So your professors get to know you very well, and I've enjoyed that a lot. I think it's very nice to be in a class where, one, it's a very academic professional setting, but also maybe you know the name of your professor's dog, anything like that. So I enjoy that a lot. But in terms of the student body and the support there, I think I would imagine that my experience is the same as someone's experience in any department. My roommates don't have the same majors as I do. One of them is an archaeology major, and one of them is doing public health and econ. So all over the board, I guess no engineering. But I think I have plenty of friends who do engineering, anything like that. I don't think most of my friends come from my classes necessarily, but more communities that I'm involved with elsewhere on campus. So while I certainly do have class friends, I don't think being in humanities has cut me off to any other area of the school.
Fair enough. Yeah, I think it just highlights how diverse these experiences here at Hopkins can be. And definitely, I think that there's a lot of benefits from having that kind of interpersonal and smaller class teaching. I'm curious to know, though, from your perspective, since you touched on literature so much, like, how do you even get all your readings done? Like, are there any strategies to go about tackling languages? Because for somebody like me, who English is not my first language, coming in as an international student, I think that there are definitely a lot of students here who often go with the college level of readings. So I'd love to hear from your perspective as an English major and writing seminars major. What is your take on tackling readings?
Yeah, it's a very good question, something I think about a lot recently. I think for me, when I think about getting readings done, I usually put it in order of things that I'm most excited about. So I'll do the readings that I'm super excited about, the authors that I like, the stories that sound interesting first, because then I get in a good mood, and that's helpful for later in the day. But I think this semester, a lot of my courses are focusing on novels rather than short stories, articles, journals, anything like that. So that means I'm reading 6 or 7 novels a week.
Wow.
And it's a lot more than I'm used to. Well, I know I can do it. I think it's intimidating sometimes to look at the number of pages or anything like that. So I try to treat it like fun reading as much as I can. Usually, I think because I'm enjoying the classes that I'm taking, the books that I'm reading are books that I would enjoy anyway.
I see.
So one of the classes I'm taking, The Forms of Moral Community, recently we read Beloved by Toni Morrison, which I had read before and enjoyed. It was fun to revisit that and think about it in terms of a new set of criteria. But for another book that we're reading right now, it's called A Fine Balance. It's a great story. And while it does have a ton of pages, I think this one we're going through for a couple of weeks because it's some 600 page giant thing. It's very fun, and when I focus on it more in terms of the story and how I'm reacting to it, I think that's easier to get through than focusing on it as this must be done by tomorrow at noon or tomorrow at 1:30. And I think that's usually my approach for journals and other things like that too, that are a little less story based and more here's the information, try and learn it. I think if I focus on it as how am I enjoying this article, what things are sticking out to me, it feels more doable just because it's less, I think, tedious.
Do you highlight your notes while you read? Do you underline stuff, or do you like?
Just, I don't.
You just read
it? I do just read it. I think I'm lucky to have a good memory.
That's awesome.
So I really lucked out there. But I know a lot of people do underline, write things in margins. I'll occasionally write something in a margin. But I think typically what I do is if I read something and I like it, I look at the page number and I remember that page number for later. And even if I don't remember what's on page 123, I'll say, you know, when I'm getting ready for class, then later in the day, I'll say page 123. I'll reread that page really quickly or skim it looking for what seemed important to me when I was doing it the day before. So I think it's not the most like organized way to go about things, but it's been working for me. So
that's awesome. Yeah. And just do whatever works best for you.
Yeah.
I'm curious to know, because you mentioned earlier that you're also doing first-year seminars as also doing mentorship. How long have you been doing study consulting?
Not long, only about a year now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Are there any like common themes or personal insights you think that would benefit everybody or the majority of the students here at Hopkins?
That's a good question. I think time management is so tricky, especially at a place where it seems like everybody is doing everything. It can be very easy to sign up for too much and do all of that. So for me, I found that scheduling everything sometimes down to 15-minute blocks or whatever feels right that day has been very helpful. And while that doesn't work for everyone, I think it's worked very well for a lot of first-year students that I've met with, especially because I think it's fun to check things off a checklist. See what you've accomplished throughout the day. Feel great by 5 p.m. when you've gone to your classes, gone to your meetings, anything like that. But I think it's also very helpful just to keep yourself accountable to a checklist or to a friend, to a mentor, or anything like that, where you're giving them updates. That way, they can congratulate you. But also, I think it's important that you're not doing things alone when it gets to all this crazy time management stuff.
Part of succeeding in terms of academically and also in work, like you mentioned, is potentially reaching out to mentors and building these connections. Can you share a little bit more about how potentially you found mentors or networked here at Hopkins?
So I think a lot of it is built into the programs here at Hopkins. So it'll say, if you're applying for X fellowship, you need to have identified a faculty mentor. So that's one, I think, very straightforward way to go about it, where you say, hello, will you please be my mentor? And that's nice. I think it gets everything down on paper, and it's good to have that relationship that's clear like that sometimes. However, overall, I don't think mentor-mentee relationships function like that, just because it can be awkward to ask someone to be a mentor if there's no official reason. So sometimes I just like to take classes over and over again with the same professor if I really like them, and I will take everything that they're teaching every semester.
Oh, that's awesome.
And that's fun. I think you get to know a person pretty well that way. But I don't know. I think when I think about people who are mentors to me right now, a lot of them are, I think, grad students too, because they're around and they're going through something that I hope to be going through in the near future.
Yeah.
And they have a good sense of what it takes to get there and what it would be good to know now, all that kind of stuff. So it's been very nice to interact with grad students, sometimes when they are at the instructor for a course that I'm taking, or a TA or something like that, but also now that I'm taking upper-level courses, a lot of my classes are split 50-50, so that's nice too. Sometimes it can be strange to be in a class with someone who used to be your TA, but also very nice to understand how they operate in an academic setting where they're a student and not the teacher.
I know, but I can really echo the sentiment about taking all the classes that a professor can offer, because I do exactly the same thing here with some of my favorite professors. Yeah. You know, part of building relationships here and being part of a community is not only having professional relationships, but also personal relationships. Can you share a little bit more about how have you managed to find and build that community, potentially through your involvement in extracurricular activities or Greek lives that you mentioned?
Yeah, so I think I really enjoy having scheduled things. This makes me sound very type A, but every week I know that on Tuesday afternoons I'm getting coffee with a friend, or on Monday mornings my roommates and I are going to sit and talk about our days. But in terms of finding these connections in the first place, I think clubs have definitely been very helpful. They force you to interact. It's impossible to come out of there without any friends. So, yeah, I think when I think about the ballet club, for example, that's a playful one. Technically, you're not supposed to talk during class, but everybody is. You're whispering, you're having fun. And I think that's a really great way to find out. You know, I'll be talking to someone and maybe they're studying biomedical engineering or physics or econ, anything like that. But we all like ballet, so we're there for that reason. And that's fun to spend Monday from 7 to 8 doing that, and then we'll chat as we head out of the building. So that's really great. But I think Greek life for me has also been a really great resource in, one, networking with people who have graduated, but also just finding lots of friends. Right now, one of my roommates is in the same sorority that I'm in, and that's how we met. And while I think she and I are not the most involved in this sorority that we're in, it's a great resource to know that when I walk into a class in the first day of the semester, if I see someone who I know from that, it's like, okay, I have a guaranteed friend. you know, I have your number. We can text if we don't know the homework. It's reliable, and it's great to have that security almost, so... That's really nice. I think it's the same for other clubs too. If I see someone from the women's network when I walk into my class, it's okay, I'll sit next to you. This is great. We've done a resume workshop together. Now we can sit together and enjoy the class. So things like that.
One of the things that you mentioned just now was on Monday mornings, you would sit down with your friend and just talk about what you do for the days. Can you potentially elaborate a bit more about how was that ritual or habit set up and what those kind of conversations look like?
Yeah, so I think, so right now one of my roommates is actually studying abroad. So we have a new roommate who has joined us in her place. But I think it's fun to talk about yourself. And we all sit down and say, what's on your agenda for today? And sometimes we'll do it in the morning on Monday morning, say, what's on your agenda for the week? And we'll go through, sometimes it's a minute by minute thing. Say, I have class from 10:30 to 11:45. Then I have a break. And during this break, I would want to walk by this building because it's pretty. And it's fun to hear about what other people are doing on campus. One of my roommates, the new one, she's studying public health. And she's doing some classes at Bloomberg as well. She was studying abroad last semester. And she's a senior, so it's fun to hear about what her life is like, because it's not a space that I'm involved with super directly. She's doing an applied math minor. I've never taken a math class here, so I don't know what those are like. It's very exciting to hear about what that feels like for her, going through a math class, going to her Spanish classes, going to public health. So I enjoy that, and I think it's the same with my other roommate, who has been my roommate for longer, where I can hear about... She's in an investment banking club on campus, so I hear about what their meetings are like, what it's like to have to recruit for a job in investment banking, which I'm glad I don't have to do. So I think it's curiosity, finding out what's going on there, and it's nice to have the stability too, where I know as soon as something happens in my life, I know exactly who I'm going to tell first. I'm going to either text them or wait until they get home. I'm sitting on the couch with news from the day.
So do you guys do that only on Monday mornings or every
day? No, I think it's honestly every day.
Just every day you just get up and you just talk about what you're going to do for the day?
It's great, yeah.
Where do you even get that started? Because
I think I'm not a morning person, but I've recently been getting up earlier. Uh-huh. So I, with my job with the university press, that's remote. So I do that in the mornings, just at our kitchen table. And then my other two roommates are actually morning people.
Oh,
so they're up to doing work and we're all just sitting at the table or on the couch. And I think it makes it a lot more enjoyable to be talking. So that's honestly where that came from.
And you start talking about your day. Wow, that's mm-hmm. that's such a great way to keep yourself accountable. Because, you know, I feel like there are definitely a lot of times and days if you don't, if you end up just like scrolling on social media in the morning and the next thing you realize it's like 3 p.m. in the afternoon and you're like, I plan to study this entire morning.
Exactly. Yeah, so it's like inspiring in some ways too. If I'm hearing that someone's
yeah.
going for a walk, then maybe I should go outside.
Yeah, I wonder how can we create those opportunities for more students? Because for me personally, one of the things that I've been doing is I found another student who's equally interested in building an accountability partner, and every day at 9 or on most days other than Fridays, we aim to call each other at 9 a.m. in the morning on a Zoom call, and we just talk about 5 things. We talk about what is our reflections of the previous day, what is our highlight for today. So it's like we define a highlight as a 60-minute to a 90-minute task that we are going to try and focus on doing. And then what's the plan for the day? And we build out that plan broken down into half an hour blocks based on the different tasks that we have and also our calendar events. But then the most important part, which is the fourth and the fifth part, is what are the potential pitfalls that would arise from this plan. So let's say, for example, I was planning to do some readings while I'm eating. My friend is gonna look at that calendar and he's, are you really gonna do that reading while you're eating, right? Now, what we've heard as well is that as we do this, is that over time we build out some principles that we realize. So for example, while you're eating, you can do work as long as it's passive. So you can watch a video, listen to something, but you can't actively be reading. And then, but then the idea there is hopefully with that kind of fourth stage is to set up the guardrails by the fifth stage of potential solutions. So let's say if one of the potential issues is I might miss my swimming session tonight because I'm like just caught up with my schoolwork. Well, then I'm going to set an alarm to make sure that I go swimming at this certain period of time. And so that tends to lead to a higher success rate and more confidence in the schedules that we end up creating. But this is a relatively recent phenomenon that we've only been doing for a month now. And honestly, I wish that we'd done earlier. But I'm just thinking about like, because it's been such a game changer for me personally. Like, how can we potentially set up these opportunities for students?
I mean, that sounds like a really great practice. I think mine is less formalized than that, but
I see.
Yeah, I think one of my roommates, and I think it might have been a New Year's resolution. She wants to talk about or recognize things that she's proud of.
That's awesome.
So that's been fun too, saying, what are you proud of? And sometimes it's, she wears sunscreen every day, and that's great.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we're proud of her for that. But it can also be thinking about, I'm proud that I did a great job on this essay, or I'm proud that I slept 8 hours last night. And I think that's another nice way to think about what's going well, especially mm-hmm. when things can seem like it's a lot going on, or a lot of intermediate steps where you're not seeing the progress yet. But yeah, I think accountability is very important to me with friendships. So it's been a part of the community that I've found at Hopkins, where sometimes it's informal accountability, saying you're going to show up for some coffee date or anything like that. But it can also, I think it can be very nice to let your friends know what's going on with your life, because everybody's here. Everybody here is doing such interesting things. So I like hearing about my friends studying public health and their internships and what's going on with their. I think I really enjoy the fact that I know the names of their bosses and their professors and a little fact about them. And it's fun to talk to them then if I can say, oh, you had this class today with the professor who said that thing last week. And then we can talk about that. And even though I'm not in that class, I feel like I'm very involved in their lives just by virtue of knowing all this stuff. So that's been really nice for me too. Part of that is finding people in other majors and other departments. So that's one way of staying involved with the community.
That's awesome. Yeah, do you ever feel like there's any tension between the community that you want to be part of and some value that you might have. So for me personally, like most recently, I've been part of a board games group where we would play board games, but just because of the way that school works, we end up starting at, for example, last evening we started at 10 p.m. and we played till 2:30 a.m. On one hand, like I'm in my college year now, I need to have this experience, otherwise these are memories that I will never forget. But and yet at the same time, you're like, I'm like, I can't pull an all-nighter just to be playing board games.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think one of my goals for this semester was to honestly just go to more events. Sometimes that can be a party with my friends, department talk, a job talk, a book talk, or the Hopkins Symphony Orchestra. And having that in the back of my mind, I think, has been very helpful because it is important to me that I'm involved with the community and that I'm doing fun things.
Yeah.
Tonight there is a writing seminars event called Lit Barn, which is an open mic for undergraduate students. So I'm going to that, and then afterwards my writing seminars friends and I are going to hang out for a couple hours at someone's apartment. And that feels like a very important thing to me, making sure that I have time to see my friends and to go read an excerpt of a short story I wrote or something like that. So I think I value that a lot, and thinking about how I can create time for that is very important because, yeah, it can be easy to say, I have too much reading, I know I have a lot of work due on Monday, and therefore I should stay in tonight and read until I get things done. Part of this is I've learned I don't do good work on Friday night, I don't do good work on Saturday night. So if I'm taking that time to do work, oftentimes that means I'm taking that time to sit and feel stressed about not doing work.
Yeah.
So that doesn't feel productive anymore. I think I'm a very goal-oriented person in that I want to know, I would like to do at least 3 things with friends Monday through Friday. And sometimes that is really just chatting while we do homework or seeing each other for 30 minutes or an hour, but that feels important to me to like break up the reading and all of that. I think I'm more productive once I've done social things like that.
How do you think you've managed to balance everything? Because from my understanding of the Greek life takes up a lot of time, especially if, you know, when I've heard a lot of my friends going through like pledging processes. And on top of that, I'd imagine, you know, ballet would have taken up a lot of time. And at the same time, you're also managing multiple campus jobs while doing a double major and a minor. How do you go about balancing your time yourself?
Yeah, I think for me, I think it's important to me that I'm doing things that I enjoy. So I don't mind if my whole day feels scheduled and taken up, if it's with things that feel exciting to me and things that I would want to be doing no matter what. So I think that's the main way that I think about that. In terms of Greek life, you mentioned that I think for me, that actually hasn't been a huge time commitment. For sororities, there's really no pledging. So I didn't have to do that, which was wonderful.
That's awesome.
It was an easy transition, but I think for a lot of clubs and organizations on campus, it's very much, you get out what you put in. So I decide if I want the women's network to be the main thing that I'm working on or the main thing that I'm getting things out of. I think that's where I put the most effort, whether that be for a week, a month, who knows. So I think that's how I try to approach that kind of stuff. So right now, I think some of the most important communities that I'm involved with on campus to me are my job at Special Collections and the first year mentor job. So I spend a lot of time at Special Collections making sure that I have all my friends there. That's fun to catch up with them while we're at work, but also getting to interact with really cool books and archives and things like that. And then I think with the first year mentor position, that's important to me too because I've committed to helping 16 freshmen get through the year. So I'm putting a lot of time and effort into that to make sure that they can report that they had a positive first year experience at Hopkins.
That's
so
awesome.
I think last year, I'm not sure if those are my priorities. I think I was putting a lot more of my time into the sorority that I'm in and into the Women's Network. And while I'm definitely still involved with those, I think it's possible to stay involved while also doing it at a lower level.
How do you potentially pick and choose what you want to focus on a semester basis, and how do you potentially fluctuate between these levels, or potentially even say no to certain opportunities?
Yeah, I think part of that is the stage that I'm in my college career. So I think in my first 2 years here, honestly, I think the most important thing was finding my community on campus. So it was really important to me that I was involved with my sorority, that I was involved with finding lots of friends, trying to make as many connections as possible. And that was a lot of fun, and I appreciate that. But I think now, as I'm starting to look at post-grad plans too, and I have a lot of friends that I was successful to have made those first couple of years, I think there's more security in that part of my life, so I'm able to look at other spaces as well. So I think that's where like my prioritization comes from, I guess, just thinking about where I would like to be next. So when I got to Hopkins, I was thinking, where would I like to be? I would like to, you know, have friends that I really care about and who care about me.
Yeah.
And that was nice to focus on that and make connections and have fun and start college that way. But now that I have them, I think I can still see them and spend lots of time with my friends and enjoy those relationships while also looking at next steps in terms of like school and career and that kind of stuff, because that's what they're doing as well. I think part of that too is like finding people with similar priorities and like goals, I guess, because they understand it, you know, they're also trying to look at grad school, trying to look at jobs, figure out where they're going next. And one of the things that I really enjoyed about Hopkins is that people are really supportive of each other because they have similar ambitions. So when I say I want to take this time to do this, they're like, yes, I support you, and so do I.
I feel like for a lot of students, it's either working and working overtime, or they're trying to take time off. I'm curious to know, so do you have a time that you like, okay, after 5 p.m. I'm not going to do work, or how does your schedule usually work?
I don't have anything like that this semester. I think in the past I've tried to do something like that where after 9 o'clock I'm done for the night. I haven't been able to do anything like that this semester, I think partially because of the workload. I think it's a little higher than what I'm used to, so I think I need more hours of the day, honestly. But I do like to take Saturdays often to not really do a lot of work. Sometimes that's zero work and that's lovely and a wonderful time. But if I am doing work on Saturdays, I like to, like you said, the work and play balance there, where last Saturday I did do a lot of work. But to get that work done, my roommate and I went to two cafes.
Oh,
so it was
awesome.
Fun. We were in Mount Vernon and able to romanticize the whole thing. We were saying, yes, I'm doing work, but it's a lovely atmosphere in this coffee shop.
That's awesome.
And for that reason, it's more doable on a weekend. So I think when I'm doing work on Saturday, I'm at the library, and that's been helpful for me.
I'm curious to know, because you mentioned you're having this great time in Mount Vernon, and it was a great memory for you. Are there any additional favorite memories that you might have had, or highlight experiences that you've had over your time here at Hopkins?
It's a good question. I think I had a lot of fun at Hoptoberfest. Not this most recent one. I sadly wasn't able to go to the performance at the end of the week, but I saw Zella Day perform on the beach, and that was so fun. I've listened to her music for a while,
so wow. It
was very fun to go to one of her concerts and be sitting there with kind of random people from my classes, so that was great. So I've enjoyed a lot of the Hopkins traditions like that, but things that are with Hopkins people outside of Hopkins, I think Baltimore has so many concerts going on, and
wow.
I've had a really good time getting to dip my toes into the whole concert music scene. My roommate, who's studying abroad right now, she's one of the leaders of the radio club.
Cool.
And through that, they were able to get some tickets, backstage pass kind of things.
Whoa.
For some concerts where they're interviewing the bands. And while I sadly could not get the backstage passes or anything like that, I was able to tag along and
awesome.
Enjoy whatever was going on. So, yeah.
What kind of concerts have happened? And do you have any
lots of boy bands.
Are they very popular?
I don't really know. Or actually, I went to one and it was Bad Sons. They're pretty popular. So I enjoyed that. That wasn't quite a boy band. But yeah, that was very enjoyable. I just bought tickets yesterday for a concert next month.
Oh.
So I'm going to see Father John Misty, who's like, it's like folk rock, I think is the genre, which I don't totally know what that means, but his whole thing is micro symphonies. So I'm going with my roommate. She and I went to his concert in September or October, and it was the best night of my life.
Wow.
Yeah.
How do you even hear about these things in the first place? You mentioned that your friend was in the radio club. But other than that, is there like a website or resource that students can browse to learn a bit more about ways that they can explore beyond the Hopkins bubble?
I think, I guess within the Hopkins bubble, Hopkins Groups is great. It lists everything going on ever. I think it includes so many things in there. It can be hard to find some of these kids that's saying, this is a meeting only available to students in the club or only available to these two people. But outside of that, I think Facebook is pretty cool. You can find lots of things. The algorithm's great. So, I don't know, I guess that works, going on Facebook and scrolling until something interesting comes up. But yeah, I think a lot of it is, I think I've figured out things that I know I enjoy. So I like ballet, I like a couple singers, and I'll just look those up, you know, thinking about is there a ballet performance going on soon. But yeah, I think whenever I'm in the mood to do something or plan, I like planning, so.
That's awesome. Can you speak a bit more about, in addition to traveling, what are some of the fun and experiences that you've had here at Hopkins, whether that be with your sorority groups or potentially other communities around here?
I think when I think of fun, a lot of that for me is just hanging out with friends, figuring out, I guess, if we do want to eat out, what's a good restaurant? Is it restaurant week? Can we go out and do something for that? So I think that's a big part of it for me, honestly, just doing things on my own and with my friends like that. But in terms of communities having fun, I think there are just so many events, so many social events going on all the time. Of course, there are the big campus traditions, you know, lighting up the quads, Oktoberfest, Spring Fair, that kind of stuff. But also a lot of clubs and organizations have some sort of social, some sort of formal, something like that, where it's just a party with people you like, and those are fun and a lot of people go to them. So that's one way that I like to socialize and have that kind of fun. I think a lot of the fun that I have, if I think about day-to-day fun, is just sitting on the beach with some close friends, getting some work done, or if it's a Sunday afternoon, I know that I'm getting coffee with someone or making coffee and we're going to do our reading together. And that feels very fun to me too. So.
Do you go out to the beach often? Like, how do you decide, okay, I'm going to work in my room, I'm going to go to Brody, I'm going to go to the beach?
Yeah, well, I think I spend a lot of time in Brody because I work here. So I don't love to do my homework here just because I think it's ruined it as a study space for me just because I'm here doing other things. So I love doing work at my kitchen table. So do my roommates. So that's one social space. And I think that's a place where I know that I can be very productive and get a lot done pretty quickly. So that's important to know. But if I want to do work and also, I think if I want to do work with less of a time crunch or anything like that, then I can do it outside. I love going on the beach, it's sunny sometimes, but also the Gilman Reading Room I think is really nice, and that's another space where I'll know I will be productive, but I can also romanticize it because it's so pretty.
Right.
There's a stained glass window, how can you not enjoy it? So yeah, I think it's figuring out what I want that time to be and where I can accomplish those things, because I need quiet to do like serious reading. But if I'm, I don't know, writing something that's not formal, or like a simple response or something like that, I can do that outside with people next to me, and that feels less worky.
Super cool. So before we wrap up here, I guess we have a couple of final fireside chat questions.
Yeah.
So these are just super short, one sentence, whatever is the first thing that comes to your mind.
Great.
What is your most memorable Hopkins experience?
I think sledding down the beach on cardboard boxes when it snowed.
If there's one thing that you can go back in time and do differently, what would it be?
I think I would learn what the majors were earlier. because I keep finding out cool things that I wouldn't necessarily have majored in, but I wish I knew about them and could have thought about it more earlier. Yeah.
What is one piece of advice that you'd give your freshman self?
Meet more people. There are so many people in this school.
What is one undervalued aspect of the Hopkins community?
Humanities, I guess. Not enough people talk about it.
I agree. What's one Hopkins resource that has most profound impact on you?
I think my advisors. They're always good people to talk to.
What's one habit that you've found most helpful for you?
Keeping a calendar.
What's one book that you would recommend every Hopkins student to read? I know it's tough for you as a humanities.
This is tough. Oh, wow. Now I can't think of any books that I've ever read. Severance by Ling Ma.
Severance.
Mm-hmm. It's weird. It, in a lot of ways, it predicts COVID, but it's also zombies, and it's beautiful.
And last but not least, what's your favorite spot on campus?
I think Gilman Reading Room. Is it the hut?
Awesome.
Yeah.
Do you have any final thoughts or advice that you might want to share with some students?
I think just learn as much as possible about the place that you're in, the space that you're operating, because there are always more opportunities than you realize, and it's exciting to learn about what other people are doing too.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Sophia. It was an absolute great conversation.
This
glad to have
fun.
You.
Thank you. Appreciate this.
Thanks for listening. To connect with Sophia and other current Hopkins students, be sure to check out the Blue Jay Connection portal on the Office of Undergraduate Admissions website.